Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Good morning, St. Louis and surrounding metropolitan area. It's Hancock and Kelly in for our regular Friday gig. You can catch us here all the way till 11 o'clock, visiting with the show after this, Amy and Chris. Don't forget you can see us on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on Fox 2 for Hancock and Kelly, the television show. And now, for the one of the finest people I know and the most politically misguided person I know, my buddy, John Hancock. Good morning.
Hey there, it's National Ice Cream Day.
Yeah, now I bet you are a weirdo when it comes to ice cream. You're probably into like butter pecan.
It's the best. Butter pecan's the best ice cream.
Or rum raisin person ice cream.
Heck, that's not old person ice cream.
Butter pecan.
It's perfectly lovely.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
What's the matter with it?
Because there's so many great flavors out there.
Yeah, you know, like the butter pecan, for
Rocky
example.
Road. You
don't
can
like
do
it.
The cookie dough.
Don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're into butter pecan.
You got the pecans in there.
Yeah, but that's because you like to have it left over to put in your coffee in the mornings. And I can understand why a little pecan, butter pecan might taste good in your coffee.
No, the vanilla is in the coffee. You put vanilla ice cream in the coffee.
You like vanilla ice cream?
I do.
I am an ice cream addict.
I like the French bean. It's got the little black
spots
in it.
Yeah, little black spots in it.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a little stronger than just regular vanilla.
I think it might be. Yeah, it's lovely.
I'm an ice cream addict.
Are you?
How often do you eat ice cream?
Very rarely.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm at least two or three times a week.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't. I love it. Now, right now in the grocery stores, they're selling these ice cream containers. I guess they're one little pint. But they tell you on the outside, only 300 calories.
Oh.
Or only 280 calories. And you can get these different things. Because normally you get those pints. You're looking at 1,200 calories if you eat a whole pint of ice cream.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What if you eat like a half gallon?
Well, I would think that'd be 3,000 or 4,000 calories. Have you done that before?
I have.
Yeah, back in college after
night
out?
I mean, sometimes you start eating out of the carton, you know, which you shouldn't do if you're not planning on finishing the
carton. Well, if you're single, you can only eat out of the carton.
Well, that's right. But if you're married, you start eating out of the carton, and I may have or may not have done that a time or two. You just can't stop.
Right.
You know, and before you know it.
Because you don't know how much you're really taking in.
You have no concept.
Yeah.
And if you're eating out of the carton, you can get the biggest honking scoop on the it's almost like an ice cream cone that you're pulling out of the carton there. And then you just start nibbling around the edges and licking the thing. And then, you know, before you know it, it's gone.
Yeah.
A half gallon. Poof.
These are the good old days when it comes to ice cream, though, because you've got all these artesian ice cream stores, you know, like the Clementines and stuff who do this real high-end, sometimes with alcohol in it. Then you've got the Ben & Jerry's stuff where they put big old chunks of stuff in it. I love Cherry Garcia.
Bunch of liberals.
It's got those chocolate and cherries in there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the standard, you know, Peavely Dairy. It's like there's a plethora of opportunity when it comes to ice cream in the world today.
I love coffee ice cream.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Mint chip is also high up on my list.
Yeah.
But butter pecan is first place.
Remember when Baskin-Robbins existed?
Oh, yeah. 31 flavors they had out there.
There was one called the Daiquiri Ice.
Yeah.
And I loved it. My sister Colleen got me into it. There was it had like a little bite and it would stick on your tongue for a little while. Mm. It was so good. Now, this isn't ice cream. It's frozen custard, but I must confess that I have not been a good St. Louisan this year.
You've not been out to,
I haven't been to Ted Drew's since last year.
Well,
when was the last time you were at Ted Drew's?
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever get it from the grocery store, like when you're at Schnucks?
And occasionally, if you're having a little party at home, you go buy some of that stuff and throw it out there. It's not?
But I mean, it's good. I mean, it's Ted Drew's. It's kind of like getting a frozen Emo's pizza. At the end of the day, it's Emo's pizza. You can taste it and stuff, but it's not as good as having one delivered.
Huh.
Going to, Ted Drew's and standing in line and it being hot out with all your other St. Louisans, and it's really kind of softer then. It's much better than it is when it's frozen when you get it from Schnucks.
Live and local, this is St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Good morning and welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. In just a little over a year, we'll all be stomping to the polls to choose our primary candidates for the 2024 general election that's taking place here in Missouri. All the statewide, most of the statewide office holders are up for grabs, and we're going to be joined by one of those hopefuls right now on the Quiver River Electric guest line. He's Cody Smith. He's a state representative from Carthage, Missouri. Mr. Smith, welcome to KMOX.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are the budget chair in the Missouri House, and you're announcing today that you're running for treasurer of the state of Missouri. Why do you want to be the treasurer?
Yeah, I'm excited to get in the race. I believe my experience makes me well-suited for the job, and my experience with public service began back in 2016, and as a small business owner, I've been a realtor for about 15 years, a small business owner. I own a company that operates in healthcare facilities for almost 10 years, and prior to that, in 2013, my wife had our son, and we started our family, and that really brought a lot of things into focus for me, as it does for a lot of people. And when I set about trying to build my business to provide for my family, I grew really frustrated with dealing with government red tape and too much taxation to, hitting those roadblocks that a lot of folks encounter. Grew frustrated, decided to run for office and get involved. In 2016, I ran for state representative and won. And since then, I've dove headlong into fiscal policy, budget policy. I worked hard to cut taxes and balance the budget and eliminate public debt. At the end of my first term, I was named House Budget Chairman, and that's given me a tremendous opportunity to impact fiscal policy. And probably the highlight of my legislative career was delivering the largest tax cut in the state's history last summer in a special session, which will amount to almost $1 billion all in once it's fully implemented. So I've got a proven track record. I think I've got the right experience, and I think I'd make a good fit for the office.
State Representative Cody Smith is our guest, and in this era of term limits, a three-term budget chairman in the Missouri House of Representatives is a rarity. You've got to be one of the longest-serving budget chairmen in the last two decades.
Yes, that's right. In fact, the last one was in the middle 80s. A Democrat in the middle 80s served for, I believe, three terms. And so this is one of those things that was a series of events that unfolded, including my predecessor, Scott Fitzpatrick, being named treasurer at the time, vacating the chairmanship, and I assumed that role. And so, there were a series of events, Governor Parson becoming governor, making a series of appointments, ultimately led to Treasurer Fitzpatrick getting that appointment, and I became budget chairman, and here I am. I've been doing it for several years, as you mentioned. It's given me a lot of good experience, a lot of opportunities to help taxpayers.
Cody Smith, you're from Southwest Missouri. That's a bastion of Republican voters down there. That's a good geographic base to run statewide. You're probably pretty unfamiliar with folks in this area, St. Louis area. How aggressively do you plan on campaigning?
Well, I plan on being very aggressive, John, and I will say that, yes, Southwest Missouri, I like to say that we were Republican before Republican was cool. It's been, we've been a strong red territory for a long time, but I've spent more time up in your neck of the woods than you might think, and I've worked with a lot of folks from the greater St. Louis area in my role as budget chairman over the years, and I've become familiar with the dynamic in the county and the city and some of the challenges that you all face there. And I've worked on some plans to try to address some of those issues. So economic development issues, crime issues, I'm all familiar with those in the area. And so I plan on spending a lot of time up there with you all and getting out across the state, not only in the St. Louis area, but in the Boot Heel and the Northwest, listening to voters, hearing about what's on their mind, how the treasurer can help make their lives a little easier, kind of stay out of their business, as I prefer government to do. And that's my mission over the next year.
Well, I wish you well. I will tell you that when I was a young married man, I ran for statewide office, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I wish you the best. Cody Smith is our guest. He's running for state treasurer. It is our political segment. Best of luck to you, Cody.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, guys.
John, we're going to be hearing a lot of these folks hopping into these races. It's just that time of year, right? We're a little over a year away from the primary taking place. So
yes.
Everybody's going to be announcing for office. And with term limits, there are going to be a lot of folks out there running for higher office.
And a lot of primaries. Well, it's our political segment, Michael. What's going on out there?
Ah, yes. Cocaine in the White House.
Yes.
Nothing to see here, John Hancock. Of course, it was reported almost a week ago that cocaine was found in the White House, close to the most secure places in the White House. The Secret Service said they were going to be doing a thorough investigation. They sent the cocaine that was found over to labs. They tested it. And guess what? They found out. They don't know whose cocaine it is, and this case is closed. Thoughts?
That is a bull excrement, if you want to know my actual opinion on this. Of course they know whose it was. And, they're speculating it might have been a visitor to the White. Okay, you're in Washington, D.C. You're staying out at the Marriott. You got a pass to go to the White House. So you got to have your wallet. You got your ID there, and, you're going to have your room key with you. Don't forget to bring your cocaine with you when you go to the White House as a guest, as a visitor. It's not
a
visitor.
And on top of it all, it was found in one of the most secure locations of the White House. You and I've both done visitor tours at the White House. I know important people in the past who've been in the White House. I've been there. I never got to go to any place like that.
No.
Yeah, they don't let regular folks go there. And you know what's disappointing? And I'm going to point out a little zit flaw on my side of the aisle.
How about that?
They're all saying, oh, it's not that big of a deal. We need to move on. Jamie Raskin, I heard him say that the other day. I have to tell you, if this was Donald Trump's White House that cocaine was found in, my friends in the left wouldn't feel this way. And, it's just... I do think this is a really, really bad look for the White House and in particular for the Secret Service.
Well, it might not be a particularly good look for poor Hunter Biden either, because...
Well, I think you got to be cautious there, brother. I mean, yes, I understand that he's a recovering addict, but to make those accusations without any basis of proof probably doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think the Secret Service knows exactly who had the cocaine, and they're not releasing it, and I find that very distasteful. But that's not the only thing going on out there.
Well, President Biden, Republicans have often talked about him being sleepy and old. Boy, he looked young and spry as he led the country and the world. Over at the NATO summit the other day, pretty good week for Joe Biden.
Young and spry.
Bringing Finland into NATO, having a great conversation with President Zelensky, laying out a plan for him to be able to join and Ukraine to be able to join NATO.
Young
and spry. Bringing the NATO alliance back together after we've watched the Republicans try to destruct it. Your thoughts on the president's visit to the NATO summit?
Well, young and spry would not be the first things that come to mind. He did have a pretty good week. I don't know what they had to give away to Turkey to get them to allow Sweden into NATO.
Stuffing.
We'll find out. We're going to visit with Colonel Jeff McCausland next hour. But it was a good week. And the week started off with Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, being somewhat critical of Joe Biden. He wants to be in NATO now. The president is not for that. There was some division amongst the NATO allies on the question of Ukraine's membership in NATO. But Biden had a sit down with Zelensky. Zelensky came out of that praised President Biden. It seems like whatever assurances were made to him were sufficient.
But in fairness, right, this was a week-long NATO summit. President Zelensky was there for a couple of days.
Yep.
The first day is when he made these comments. Let's not forget, this man is leading a war and a country against a horrible oppressor. He has to speak to his own constituency at the same time, and, they'd like to see America and NATO help them. So I think President Zelensky's lecture then gets tempered the next day as he winds up sitting down with the allies and coming up with. So I think it probably was a scripted play in terms of, I don't think anybody was surprised that President Zelensky was so forceful in his disappointing rhetoric about why he's not being allowed into NATO. You get what I'm saying?
I do. And I do think it's going to happen. I mean, it's been as far back as 2018 that Ukraine was basically promised that someday they would be NATO members. So I think it's going to happen. They're going to have to kick the Russians out of their country first.
Yeah. When we first had President Biden elected president, we were in the midst of a pandemic. We were in the midst of skyrocketing inflation. Wow, this week numbers come out. Inflation's at the lowest it's been in over 3 years. It's close to 3 or 4% right now. The lowest in the developed world. Inflation is the lowest in the developed world, lowest of all the G7 countries. President Biden is touting that as a result of Bidenomics and working in conjunction with the Fed. They seem to have brought this fire under control at this moment.
Well, here's the problem with running on that issue. If you're Joe Biden, this 3 or 4%, whatever it is on top of the 14% we had last year, and people's wages have not caught up. And so the cost of living is still greater than it was during the Trump years. And, you know, you can say inflation has come down, but the effects of inflation are still being felt all across the economy. And I don't think that's going to be a winning. I don't think Bidenomics is going to be a winning issue.
Well, one might say he's been able to temper it. Obviously, inflation had started during the Trump administration as a result of the pandemic. We saw inflation go through the roof, the supply chain problems that we had. It's been tempered now. Maybe we're going to see prices roll back. The president's clearly going to be running on the economy if it continues at this level now.
If he runs.
That's a theory that you have. I think the president's running until he's not.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, we've got so much to talk about on the show this morning. Michael Kelly alongside with John Hancock. And when we come back, a gentleman is suing Fox News, and Colonel Jeff McCausland is going to join us for the latest in Ukraine. That's next on Camel X.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
So as we were listening to the news there, I was scrolling through my Facebook feed.
You were?
And I've gotten sick to my stomach.
Ooh.
They're advertising back to school stuff already?
Yeah.
Back to school?
Yeah, back to school.
I don't know about you, man. I hated school. I hated school. Every minute of it. And the time leading up to having to go get your school supplies and stuff just made me sick.
Oh, I used to love getting
And
up.
Now the fact that we're in the middle of July and these kids are already having to get their back to school stuff.
Oh, the little three-ring binder, you know, with the pockets in there. Have your little spiral notebooks.
You really liked that stuff?
Loved it.
You were a nerd.
Loved
it. Weren't you? You were a nerd.
Had a little spiral notebook for every class.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Wow. My mother is taking her dog to school right now to learn how to behave and stuff.
Wow.
And I'm sick for the dog every morning when she tells me, oh, yeah, I'm taking the dog to school. I'm thinking that poor thing. Ugh. School was the worst for me, man. I hated it.
Dog's going to learn how to bark to 10. I mean, it's going to be great.
Hey, John, have you been paying attention? Of course you have. Fox News, man, is getting sued left and right. They had the Dominion lawsuit, which cost them almost, $750 million?
Yep. Smartmatic is into them for $2.7 billion, that case pending.
And now it's going down to individuals. Now, here's a name that's probably a household name in anybody who watches Fox News. I'd never heard of the guy.
Huh.
Ray Epps, an Arizona man who has become the figure in conspiracy theory surrounding the riot that took place on January the 6th. From what I understand, the mob and the MAGA heads, the Tucker Carlsons, the Fox News crowd is saying that this guy was some type of plant put in there by the FBI to help rile people up and to get them storming the Capitol. There's no basis in this truth. This man was personally targeted on a number of shows across the Fox News platform.
Particularly by Carlson.
His family wound up having to move to a different location. They're trying to stay in hidden places. He's had enough of it. He's filed a defamation lawsuit against Fox News, and they may be on the hook for more millions.
Yeah, and he got arrested yesterday by the FBI, or the day before, one or the other, the same day that Christopher Wray testified before Congress and was asked about this Ray Epps situation. That was an interesting set of timing. 2 years after the fact, he gets arrested for his involvement. But that does at least underscore the fact that he was not an FBI informant or agent at the time. How Tucker Carlson came up with that theory, I do not know. But you'll remember when January 6th happened, the early narrative on the right was that it was Antifa actually posing as Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol.
Right.
Well, that was not true. and then it became the conspiracy that it was actually the FBI itself fomenting that violence. That appears to not be true. And this guy's, I don't know what the amount of the lawsuit is. I'm sure it's substantial. And I think Fox News it may find itself on the hook for a whole lot more money over this thing. I mean, you think you're generating death threats on somebody, forcing them to move, leave their home.
So
that's a big
deal.
Was
this man a part of the protest that took place?
Yes.
Or the insurrection, from my perspective, took place on January 6th?
He was outside. He went to the rally on the Ellipse, as thousands of people did. Most of those people didn't go into the Capitol that day. But Ray Epps was right there at the fence, at the barricade, where the first skirmishes started with the police, the Capitol Police, who were trying to keep the people out. And Epps was seen on camera whispering something into the ear of one of the supporters. And Carlson's inference was that he was encouraging the guy to go in. And Epps ended up not going in.
Right.
And so he was not part of the group that actually penetrated that perimeter. Still, he was arrested for inciting of violence, I suppose, was the charge that the FBI brought. But here's the interesting thing to me.
Okay.
So you got to remember that at this time, by the time you get to January 6th, we've had this whole series of attempts to delay, postpone, or change the election outcome. You mm-hmm. had a series of 60 or so lawsuits that failed, except for one in Pennsylvania. And then you had an attempt to bring alternative sets of electors to Congress and send those in for the purpose of creating some confusion on the certification day, January 6th. And that didn't work. And then you finally have this culmination. And all of this time that's going on here and leading up to the election, all of that time, you've got these brand new, very right of center stations, the One American News, Newsmax, that had begun really cutting into Fox's market share. Fox had been pretty much the lone repository for conservatives to watch and get their news content. They were beginning to bleed viewers. And in that context, Fox News went all in on the election conspiracy and denial theories, none more so than Tucker Carlson, who's no longer there, of course. And this was one of those things that Fox News promoted and advocated. And now they've since fired Tucker Carlson, but Fox News, I think they're on the hook for this deal.
Well, and then it's $750 million to this point. Some other lawsuits are still pending now that you have this going. But Fox News, Fox, if you will, is a huge multinational corporation. It literally operates throughout the entire globe. Yeah. It does movies, it's radio, TV, and newspapers throughout the world. They probably can continue to sustain these couple of billion-dollar lawsuits they're losing. But these upstarts, I don't know that they can survive these types of defamation lawsuits if they wind up being on the wrong side of them here shortly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, what they built over there at Fox is impressive. You stand back and look at because, you know, in the 1990s, they really didn't exist. And now all of a sudden, they are the dominant force in cable news.
Lord help us.
On television.
Hey, one subject a little bit associated with this, January 6th, Jack Smith doing the investigation. It came out this week that both Jared Kushner and Hope Hicks, Jared Kushner, of course, the son-in-law of the president, the closest advisor involved in everything, got $2 billion from the Saudis. Hope Hicks, who came in, kind of became the Trump whisperer in the last year or so of the Trump presidency, both testified before the January 6th commission with Jack Smith. Thoughts? Anything to read into here?
Well, I don't expect that they would have given up much information. I can't imagine that Smith is going to go after Donald Trump for the speech he gave. There's all kinds of First Amendment concerns there. I just can't see that you can draw an incitement to riot case. In fact, Trump's own rhetoric on the ellipse was, let's be peaceful when we go down to the Capitol. So he's not looking at that, I don't think. What he may be looking at is all of those steps that I just discussed leading up to January 6th, the phony elector scheme, the John Eastman memo of getting Mike Pence to reject the slate of electors from a number of states, and whether or not those things were – the lawsuits certainly weren't illegal. He's perfectly free to file lawsuits. So I suppose he's looking at those kinds of things. I still would be somewhat surprised if Donald Trump is charged in that January 6th wing of the investigation. I've always thought the documents case against Donald Trump was the most serious and solid and provable case that existed out there.
We shall see. We'll keep an eye on it. Jack Smith's investigation continues to roll on. Hey, we got to step aside. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Colonel Jeff McCausland about the great summit that just took place over in Europe, NATO. We'll get his read on what happened there and a lot of the internal division that's taking place in the Republican Party in terms of supporting Ukraine after this on KMOX.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
And welcome back to KMOX. John Hancock alongside Michael Kelly. You know, Georgianne had the bookshelves painted.
Is that right?
She did. And so I had to take all the books out of the bookshelf. And which I had a lot of books in that bookshelf. And so I recently put all of the books back in. And one of the books that I put back in the bookshelf was Battle Tested. Great book on leadership from the Battle of Gettysburg, written by our guest, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst and author, joins us. Colonel, I haven't been able to talk to you for a few weeks. We're glad to have you back.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I've been in Africa. Literally just got off an airplane from Cape Town a couple hours ago.
Wow. Well, I'd love to hear about that one of these days. Sweden finally allowed access into NATO. Turkey had been the holdup there. Were there any promises, concessions made to Turkey to get them to acquiesce and allow Sweden in?
Well, I think what Erdogan had done is basically discovered he had gotten about as much out of this particular effort as he could. On the one hand, at home, he had used this issue to appeal to a populist sentiment amongst the Turkish electorate in the run-up to the Turkish presidential elections, which he won, but by a very close close vote in a second round of the election. And number two, of course, the real issue is for the United States is the F-16s that Turkey has wanted to purchase. They've been held up in the United States Senate for concern over Turkish human rights violations and also Turkey holding up this membership for Sweden. So it appears there was a deal cut whereby those aircraft then will be sold to Turkey. And then finally, of course, the Turks insisted that the Swedes take certain action against Kurdish people who had immigrated from Turkey to Sweden that the Turks argued were part of the Turkish Kurdish Workers Party, or PKK, which has been conducting a rebellion against the Turkish government for many, many years. The Swedes went so far as to amend their constitution, change some laws, and discuss the possibility of repatriating some of these people back to Turkey. I think, back to what I said to start with, I think Erdogan thought, I push this as far as I can. I've got as much out of it as I can. If I push it too far, I will demonstrate a lack of alliance unity. And my country right now is suffering from severe economic problems, about a 40 to 50% inflation rate, that I need West, I need Western support economically, and so now is the time to cut a deal.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, of course, the NATO summit just concluded. More pledges of support for Ukraine. The president of the United States sending cluster bombs, a controversial weapon, to Ukraine for use in the theater. How is their counteroffensive going at this point?
Well, the counteroffensive is moving along pretty slowly but steadily. And I think we sometimes think about speed and we ought to think about tempo and think about who is reacting to who. And clearly, the Russians are on their back foot, and they're reacting to the Ukrainians. The cluster munitions that were given to Ukraine by the Biden administration are, frankly, the same rounds that we fired back during the Gulf War when I was a battalion commander, with great effect on Iraqi defensive positions, trench lines, not terribly unlike the defensive positions that the Russians have constructed in Ukraine. And certainly there are about 100 countries who have signed a prohibition on the use of cluster munitions. The United States and Ukraine are not signatories to that particular agreement. And in this case as well, Ukraine is reacting to aggression against them. But they have requested these to use on their territory and have said they will do so in a fashion that tries to limit the possibility of any civilian collateral damage, the big problem being that a significant number of bomblets associated with these cluster munitions are often duds. And as a consequence, you get kind of a hasty minefield. And there have been instances where children in particular pick one of these things up, play around with it, obviously with catastrophic consequences.
We are visiting with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News analyst. Colonel, President Zelensky showed up at the NATO summit spitting mad, started out really scolding NATO for not allowing him in. As the week went on, he adjusted his posture, and everything seems to be right with the world. Did we watch a little global political theater of him playing to his folks in Ukraine, or was this really well-founded?
Well, I think it was a little bit of both. Certainly he was playing the folks at home for were adamant about a couple of things. One is that they would argue in Ukraine, and I've spoken to them, that they are fighting a war for Europe. This is a threat to Europe posed by the Russian Federation. The battlefield happens to be Ukraine, and we're fighting that for you, and but it's our people who are dying in the process. Secondly, of course, a concern by the Ukrainians that any kind of a put-off on this raises the specter of some kind of whereby Ukrainian membership, trying to make it kind of a neutral buffer zone between NATO and Russia. And that would be the real fear of Ukraine. But at the end of the day, I think the Ukrainians came out in pretty good shape. All 31 countries of NATO agreed that Ukraine should be a member in future, number one. The establishment of a NATO-Ukraine council, whereby they'll be invited to participate in discussions on NATO policy. Significant amount of military hardware, like the cluster munitions we mentioned a moment ago. And a commitment by G7 countries who are also present to provide further financial and economic assistance to Ukraine now and in the rebuilding of Ukraine once the war is over.
And we are visiting with Colonel Jeff McCausland on the Quiver River Electric guest line. Hey, Colonel, President Biden spent a lot of time at the NATO summit talking about the solidness of the NATO alliance, and it's going to be together for the foreseeable future. This is obviously trying to ease a lot of the concerns our NATO allies had during the Trump administration and political change that may take place in America. This is all happening in the backdrop in the United States Congress when we're watching Republicans who are trying to defund Ukraine. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. I think President Biden, if you like President Biden or not, you would have to agree that he has done a yeoman's effort in improving relations amongst the alliance members from where it was when Donald Trump departed office, and also, frankly, after the rather catastrophic withdrawal by NATO countries, including the United States, from Afghanistan. And now we see a NATO very united, reconfirming their support for Ukraine. Admission of two new countries to NATO. NATO is now larger and stronger with the admission of both Finland and Sweden. But at the same time, we have a certain number of particularly right-wing Freedom Caucus Republicans who are arguing that the United States should not provide any support to Ukraine or any further support to Ukraine. And we have several leading presidential candidates on the Republican Party, most notably Mr. Trump himself, as well as Governor DeSantis, who have also argued at times that the United States should end its support for Ukraine. And I think that's really unfortunate at this moment, because obviously nobody's happier to hear those particular words being said than Vladimir Putin, who's got his own problems right now in Moscow. But the dissension in the United States House of Representatives about aid to Ukraine probably provides Mr. Putin a bit of solace.
You know, speaking of Vladimir Putin, it was 3 weeks ago today, Friday evening, our time, when Evgeny Prigozhin, the leader of the Wagner Group, moved his troops into Russian soil, was marching them towards Moscow, cuts a deal, and seemingly there's no repercussions. Now it's unclear whether the Wagner Group even exists any longer. But what do you make of all of that?
This is one of the most bizarre tales that I have ever witnessed in my time dealing in European security policy over the period now of almost 50 years. I mean, this was totally bizarre that this guy, who's the head of his own paramilitary group, could mount this kind of a mutiny, take over a major combined arms army headquarters in Rostov-on-Don, launch a movement, a so-called March on Justice, are urging the unseating of the defense minister and the chief of general staff, and get within 120 kilometers of Moscow with almost no opposition by the Russian military, National Guard, or anybody in the process. And after being declared a traitor and a stab in the back by Vladimir Putin, suddenly a deal is cut whereby he is pardoned of all things, offered exile in Belarus, and none of his troops are going to be held responsible for at least 13 Russian airmen that were killed during this abortive mutiny attempt. I mean, it is totally unbelievable. And furthermore, we know a few days later that Putin actually met with Rogozin in Moscow and other Wagner leaders about what was going to happen in the future. So right now, what's going to happen? Very unclear. Clearly, the Wagner group appears to have been disbanded. There are reports of weaponry being turned in. Their integration into the Russian military, I think, is not going to happen. Camps established for them in Belarus do not seem to be occupied. Nobody's quite sure where Prigozhin is. The best guess is he's in St. Petersburg. And Mr. Putin now, having realized that he doesn't want to make Prigozhin into a martyr, is trying to marginalize him by claiming that there were problems with the contracts. Prigozhin had gotten over $1 billion last year from the Russian government that are now going to be investigated for trying to take away his media empire, basically trying to discredit him in the eyes of the Russian people. Finally, at the same time, we've seen a significant number of senior Russian general officers who might have been aware of this particular attempt, though may not have been directly involved, suddenly being disappearing or being arrested, most notably General Sorovikin, who was the commander of all operations in Ukraine for a period of time, who has been reported to have been arrested. Peskov, the Kremlin press secretary, when asked about him, said he was resting at home right now. So Putin is certainly doing, I think, a purge of those he thinks might be disloyal.
Colonel, just about a minute left. Let's go back to domestic stuff. The senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, continues to hold up appointments to the Joint Chiefs and other places related to our United States military. It's not something that Joe Biden and most of the Republican caucus even supports. Is he putting our national security in jeopardy?
I would say he certainly is, because we're talking about high-quality individuals who may decide to leave the military, or others may decide to leave because we're going to tie their assignment to senior positions to their cultural or social identity on certain topics that Senator Tuberville, for some reason, finds particularly persuasive. And this is terribly unfortunate because we're holding up the entire nomination and confirmation of those officers. At the same time, these same issues may jeopardize the passage of the defense budget, which is due to be passed by the 30th of September, but right now seems problematical because these same sort of issues over abortion support, over the teaching of classes on equal opportunity in the military and the like are being included into what should be a standard defense budget on how much we pay the troops, how many pieces of military hardware we produce in future, and investment in training and other operations.
Thank you so much, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. We always appreciate you having on. Hey, we're going to step aside for the news, but when we come back, the biggest names in movies are on strike. Could it eventually affect you? We'll talk about it after this on KMOX.
Find out what's happening with your Redbirds from the manager himself, Oliver Marmol. Sunday mornings at 10:15 on Sports on a Sunday morning. And Wednesday mornings at 9:50. The Ollie Marmol Show on Cardinals Radio, KMOX.
And welcome back to KMOX. John Hancock, Michael Kelly alongside. And we saw yesterday the president of the Screen Actors Guild, the famous actress Fran Drescher, highly emotional, announcing the strike by the Screen Actors Guild. And joining us to talk about it is Bloomberg reporter Azul Sibils-Blackier. Azul, welcome to St. Louis. Welcome to KMOX.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
So what is the situation? The writers had struck, and now the actors are joining them?
Yes, that is exactly the situation. Writers and actors alike have very similar demands right now for the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which represents studios like Netflix and Disney. They're mostly concerned, both writers and actors, about AI potentially not completely taking their jobs, but making them limiting the amount of views that studios can get out of, you know, real people. And they're actually demanding for regulations to be put in place, for salaries to increase. And the studios have not responded accordingly to the union's demands. And so now, for the first time in over six decades, both writers and actors are on strike.
Yeah, and the actors seem to be the tip of the spear in dealing with AI and our culture. AI's had to have been a part of Hollywood to this point. What specifically are the actors wanting? They just want to terminate AI completely? Or are they looking for some type of payment for their image being used for AI?
So they're looking for the studios to be able to negotiate on them regarding this, which the studios have not shown very open to do. For example, right now, if you're an extra on a show or on a movie, you only get paid to appear once, but then the studios can use your likeness and your image throughout the rest of the movie. So you're only essentially getting paid for a day's work, when actually, if without AI, your job would be much larger. So what they're looking to do is to really get some regulations in place that will not render their jobs essentially useless, and get paid for, you know, accordingly for the amount of hours they would have usually worked.
This SAG-AFTRA, headquartered in the United States, a union here in the United States that works on behalf of actors, has this shut down the global film industry and the global movie industry as a result of this strike?
Well, considering that, you know, Hollywood films or films made and created in the United States and with actors in the United States are so massive and take up such a big portion of actual movies and TV shows, I would say the answer to that is likely yes.
Azul Sibyls Blockier is our guest, Bloomberg News reporter. She joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. What are the industry insiders speculating about the possible length of this work stoppage?
You know, I don't know that anybody is speculating anything yet. We are all just looking at how much it's going to cost the industry. The largest strike by writers was in 2007, I believe, and it lasted 100 days. It cost the economy over $2 billion. And so it's a matter of who's going to break first at this point. But I don't know that anybody is daring to make any estimates as of this point.
Well, we're going to keep our eyes on it for sure. Thank you so much, Azul, for your time and insight this morning on KMOX.
Thank you so much.
So what's interesting to me here, John, is exactly what I said. This seems to be the tip of the spear in this whole AI conversation. Of course, we've talked about fake, people being able to fake voices and fake stuff. But now actors are saying, hey, wait a minute, this is going to happen to me. Who cares about Hollywood actors, you know, making $50 million a film?
Right.
But at the end of the day, this is likely coming to your office if you work in a factory, if you work as an accountant. AI is something that we're not going to be able to turn the clock back on. And I think the actors are starting what's going to be a series of work stoppages as we try to navigate this.
I think that's right. And, you know, think if you're a writer. And your job is to generate creative content. Say you're writing for a weekly serial on television. And AI can write those scripts. That, you know, you give it a couple of scenarios and boom, you've got a script. And so if you're a writer, this is threatening your very existence and livelihood.
Yeah, and there's so many places where AI can be helpful. We've talked about it in the medical industry and the health industry to be able to accumulate those studies and come up with stuff.
Right.
At the same time, one of the biggest industries in our country is the finance industry, and you're starting to see stockbrokers who are losing their opportunities at some of the big houses because AI can simply make the trades and do a lot of the things that so many people have made a good living doing in the past.
Well, and lawyers, accountants. We've become such a service-centered economy as it is, and this is it's a real threat to all of that.
So I've always used the analogy that, hey, you know, time moves on. The horse didn't like it when they invented the car, and they find something else for the horse to do. But the
carriage rides.
Yeah, but the reality is AI could put hundreds of millions of us out of work. There's some opportunities. I always hear from the naysayer or the others saying, yeah, there's some opportunities. People are going to have to run those computers, et cetera. But it seems to me that we're starting something kind of like when we started the nuclear bomb. Once we open Pandora's box, there's no putting that sucker back in there. And who knows where AI is going to take us? Are you worried about your job?
I'm old. But, I worry about the effect on the economy, and there's, you know, when you just stop and think about even manufacturing. I mean, look at the role that robotics has already played in, right. in manufacturing. And those are good-paying jobs for the most part that are gone now.
Well, but a lot of those jobs, the construction of automobiles are being repatriated to America because the robots, you know, they don't cost anything on an hourly wage. But there are workers who need to operate them.
Sure.
But we're significantly 75, 80% less the workers. I just wonder if people are concerned about AI the way that I am in terms of not only what it could do potentially in terms of destruction, but in terms of taking all of our jobs, which could leave us all here just serving each other dinner, giving each other back rubs and tattoos.
Well, and you got to, I could use a back rub right now. But you got to also keep in mind that, you know, progress does occur. And we've been, as an economy, very resilient to modernization, and our productivity has increased steadily for well over two centuries now, and it continues to do so. And our unemployment rate is at a very low point right now. So, I mean, I'm concerned about AI. Yeah. Some of the real horror stories, prognostications, I don't know that I'm quite there yet.
Yeah, well, you know, the movie industry has changed so drastically. I mean, with the pandemic coming, so many of us watch movies. When was the last time you were in a movie? Have you been to the movie theater since the pandemic?
Yes, and we saw, I can't remember the name of it, Sandra Bullock was in it.
Okay.
But I think I want to go see Oppenheimer.
Okay, I want to see Oppenheimer, but that's not necessarily a flick I want to go see in a theater. The only movie I have seen since the pandemic in a theater is Top Gun 2, because I wanted to see it on. I'd like to see Indiana Jones, the new one that's coming out, and I probably will go see that in a theater. Maybe the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie. But I have to tell you, I'm one of those people who's guilty of helping kill the movie industry because I like being able to do it in the comfort of my own home and paying the $20 there rather than paying the $20 when I go to the theater.
Well, I don't know. I there's still an experiential thing about going to the theater and you're sitting
there. Yeah, it's nothing better than a guy coughing next to you, somebody spilling their popcorn, the guy getting up to go to the bathroom. Come on, man. The movie theater is so passe these days, right? But there's nothing better than that big screen. But the comfort of your own home to watch movies, it's kind of nice.
Well, I suppose you don't like to go to the ball game either.
I love going to the ball game. I'd like to go to the ball game when we're winning. But I have a feeling the next time I go to the ball game next year, it'll be a completely different team than what I'm going to see tonight.
It may very well be. We'll talk about that next. It's Hancock and Kelly on KMOX.
KMOX is the regional Edward R. Murrow Award winner for excellence in sound.
Welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show.
You know who this is?
Who is this?
So, I think this is the guess who? James? James doesn't know.
He don't know.
I think, you know, the lead singer, the lead guitarist for the Guess Who, which I didn't know until just a few years ago, is Randy Bachman.
Who's that? Bachman-Turner Overdrive. How about that?
Yeah,
I knew that.
I didn't know that.
Wow, that's interesting. Speaking of Bachman-Turner Overdrive, you're going to have Hancock Kelly Overload, because we're going to spend another hour here with our good friends Amy and Chris shortly as they come in to do a little transition hour with us. We'll step aside, and they'll take it after that. We'll probably head to the snooker table together.
Ooh.
Of course, don't forget you can see us on Sunday morning on Fox 2 for the Hancock and Kelly, the television show. It's 8:30 every Sunday morning. We'd love for you to join us. And, John, speaking of people joining us, there's going to be some new people joining us. John Mozeliak with some really strong words, putting it out there, saying that we are going to be in the trade market.
Yep.
So sum it up for me, pal. Who's going? Who's staying?
Well, you don't know. I think there'll be at least one surprise move that that we aren't expecting. I think everybody generally believes that Jordan Montgomery, the left-hander, who's really, you can make a case, has been the most consistent starter for the Cardinals all season. His contract's up at the end of the year. Certainly Jack Flaherty, who of late has pitched much better. He's a commodity out there. I don't think he's a number one starter.
I feel like he was hurt his entire contract with us.
He had some, definitely missed a lot of time, and his contract is up, and he's a free agent after this season. So I think those two will be moved.
What about the corners, man? The best players in baseball, the reigning NL MVP, and Paul Goldschmidt.
Mo essentially said he's keeping the core of the team together, and that would include Goldschmidt and Arenado. There was some speculation by some of the national baseball people that Goldschmidt could be moved because he's got 1 year left on his contract after this. He's going to be entering his age 37 season next year. And he could be a very powerful force for a contending team right now that's looking for a first baseman, and a lot of speculation about the Yankees being that
team. They need one up there.
But it doesn't look like he'll move, and they're going to keep that core in place. I'll tell you some people, though, who might be moving along. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals traded Paul DeJong, who, you know, Paul DeJong has taken a lot of flack. He's had a couple of his last three seasons have not been good. And he was batting under 200 last year for the Cardinals. Started off the season in the minors. He was hurt, and then he was in the minors. The Cardinals called him up. If you look at DeJong's numbers this year, and particularly his clutch hitting numbers, the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, he's batting over 300. He's batting over 300 with runners in scoring position. And, you know, the average is, I don't know, he's 230, 240, somewhere in there. Maybe he's at 250, but he's hit with some power. And you look at all these high-priced shortstop free agents that have signed over the last couple of years. I'm thinking about Trey Turner, Carlos Correa, Lindor, who's signed. And DeJong's numbers, particularly his power numbers, are commensurate to what those guys are putting up this year. He is a guy that could have some real trade value for a team that's looking for a shortstop, and his defense is steady.
Yeah, but there's teams, John, that are going to want to make that run be in the playoffs, win, have an opportunity to win. I get that a DeJong or a Tyler O'Neill, you know, they might bring you some prospects or something.
Well, I think all of these are going to be prospects.
Don't Paul Goldschmidt or Nolan Arenado bring you real tangible opportunity with maybe big names coming?
No, because a team that would acquire them is contending for the playoffs, and so they're not going to cut loose of one of their best pitchers to fix their first base problem. You know, you just can't. That's not going to happen. So you're going to be looking at prospects, I think. For the most part, you might get a number three starter from somebody, but I mean, heck, we got enough of those now. There's some young guys in the minor leagues, thinking about Gordon Graceffa and specifically, that I'd like to get a look at this year. And I think one of the interesting things that could happen here in this post-All-Star rest of the season is we might see what a Mason Winn at shortstop looks like for the Cardinals, a guy that I think they, in a perfect world, would like to wait another full year to bring him up. But I think we may see him get some playing time at shortstop if they clear out some of the we're oversubscribed in the outfield. So that means you're going to move Dylan Carlson maybe. I think Alec Burleson, if there's a market for him, could be moved. Juan Yepes is a guy that is basically blocked from the team because of the glut of outfielders we have. He could be moved.
When we had the MV3 going on, it was obvious that this team was going to be built around Albert Pujols. Does it seem like, if you're looking in your crystal ball, that we're going to be building this new Cardinal team around Jordan Walker?
Well, he's certainly going to be a big part of it. And don't forget about Nolan Gorman. He's had such a hot start to the year. He's cooled off in June and July. But the guy's put up some very impressive numbers. His RBI numbers are, you know, he's going to challenge 80, 90 RBIs if he plays for the rest of the season. And that's impressive production from a guy. And again, if the Cardinals can clear out some of the glut in the outfield, because Tommy Edman can play center field for this team. He's certainly demonstrated that. And that opens up the spot for a Mason Winn at shortstop. You've got, you know, Nolan Gorman can play second base. He's played it satisfactorily. Donovan moves around everywhere. And Donovan, by the way, Brendan Donovan, I think, is a very underappreciated part of this ball club. The guy's a clutch hitter. He doesn't strike out. He's got great plate discipline. He's solid defensively no matter where you put him. And he plays everywhere. I mean, everything but catcher and pitcher, you put the guy out there and he's going to give you a solid performance every single time.
What do the arms look like down in Memphis and Springfield? Do we have some coming up? We heard so much about Matthew Liberatore over the last several years.
That seems to have been a disappointment. Well, that's the thing. You know, you got this guy, Tink Hintz, who's not ready. But he's the next hot, you know, shiny object. Mentioned Graceffa, who's also a shiny object. I like the guy we drafted last year. Now, he's still a couple of years away. This Cooper Jerpy, I think his name is, which is a great name. It's a Jerpy with a silent H. at the beginning.
Right.
There's nothing like it. The last silent H pitcher the Cardinals had was?
Rabosky?
Yes, Al Rabosky.
Hey, now.
Very good.
Hey, so it's the weekend, and I can't believe this. You were telling me earlier today that Tula, your granddaughter, is a year old.
Almost 15 months.
Goodness gracious, man. It's amazing how fast time goes by. Grandpa, you're going to be taking her out tonight, huh?
We're going to have a little Mexican cuisine with Tula this evening. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, boy.
And, she's
hope you don't have to deal with the diapers.
She's a good.
That.
No. She's a good little eater, though. She loves
she's
to eat.
She's a good little eater.
She knows 7 words now, one of which is pawpaw. So that makes me very happy.
I bet it does. Hey, you know what makes us happy is we get to spend time with Chris Ranji and Amy Marks, of course. They're coming in here shortly. We got to thank a couple of people who've helped us today.
James O'Sullivan doing a masterful job behind the board, as always. And, of course, Frank Ladd niftily producing the program today. He's Michael Kelly. I'm John Hancock. It's the Chris and Amy Show. And Cardinal Baseball returns tonight on the Voice of St. Louis News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.